over the middle, firing in traffic. It's caught for the touchdown. Galladay's got that one. Blitz coming, floats one for the end zone. Galladay is the end! Touchdown!
On the toss, it goes back from McKissick to Stafford, and now he goes deep for Galladay. Touchdown!
Breaking news here on CBS Sports HQ. The New York Giants are taking wide receiver Kenny Galladay off the free agent market. Our Jason Laclanfora has confirmed the deal, and our Jonathan Jones confirming the terms. It's a four-year contract worth $72 million, but could go up to $76 million. There are $40 million guaranteed. He'll make $18 million per season. A JLC reporting Chicago and Cincinnati were also in this chase, but at the end of it all, Galladay taking his talents to the G-Man.
Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG, every once in a while, Ethan and Weiss here with you once again to discuss quite possibly the biggest Giants free agency move in a very long time. Before we get into everything, you know what we got to do. We got to take care of the housekeeping. So first things first, follow us on Twitter. You can follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Follow the blog at GothamSN. Subscribe, subscribe, subscribe. We're everywhere. iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, Spotify. Subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe. Rate us 5 stars. I am pumped. I think all of our listeners are pumped. Weiss is pumped. Kenny Galladay. Kenneth Galladay. First of his name.
The big one, yeah.
Is a New York football giant.
Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen, we got him.
Yes.
It took a very long time, but I am happy to say that it was worth the wait and refreshing due diligence on the part of Dave Gettleman, Joe Judge, John Mara, Chris Mara, whoever you stan and want to give credit to. Due diligence and a somewhat sound free agency process, at least as it pertains to Kenny Galladay. I'm sure we'll discuss the Booker signing in a minute, but overall, I would say that this has been a very good free agency period for the Giants. Now, of course, we need to see how everything plays out, but this is 2021. This is the time of Twitter and podcasts and instant reactions. So last season, last offseason, Blake Martinez, everyone was very bearish on. Bradberry, I think everyone was relatively in favor of, just wasn't sure how it would pan out.
He wasn't their number one option. You know, everyone wanted
right.
Byron Jones, but they ended up...
Exactly. Right. But it worked out. And Dave Gettleman gets an A-plus for that free agency class. Right now, as it looks, I'm ready to give Dave Gettleman another A for his free agency class. And let me make that distinction for his free agency class. Not for his offseason, for the free agency class, right? That still goes for 2020 free agency class, 2021 free agency class. All right. Let's specifically discuss Kenny Galladay, because big fish, big-bodied wide receiver, exactly what the Giants need. I mean, you look back at who the Giants have had as their pass catchers over the last 10 years outside of Odell Beckham. I mean, the likes of Reuben Randle, Preston Parker, Slayton, sixth-round pick, Golden Tate. The Giants finally have that number one alpha receiver again, who can go up and get contested balls, who can be a red zone. I'm already slurring my words here. That's how excited I am and how much we're celebrating. Who can go up in the red zone, get those contested catches, and who you can go into the season and say, our expectation of this guy is 1,000 yards, 10 touchdowns, and if he does not reach that, it is considered a disappointment, right? That's the type of receiver that we're talking about with Kenny Golladay. And you bring in Kyle Rudolph, John Ross, high upside signing. This is the make-or-break year from Daniel Jones. Now, I'm bringing this up because our good friend Justin Pendick from Talking Giants, Bobby Skinner, great name, Bobby Skinner's co-host on Talking Giants. This is make-or-break for Daniel Jones in a much different way than it was for someone like Josh Allen. Because at least from Josh Allen's rookie season to his sophomore season, there was improvement, both on the tape and in the stats. Daniel Jones did not have that, okay? Daniel Jones regressed his sophomore year. Now, go ahead and blame the offensive line. Go ahead and blame, you know, his lack of offensive weapons. Go ahead and probably the most rationally, go ahead and blame it on Jason Garrett, who's still going to be here this season. At least we hope not. Maybe there's a change mid-season.
He's the Giants offensive coordinator going into week one.
Right. That might not be the same going into week six or seven, depending on the production. Yeah. But on the roster, as it stands, Kenny Golladay, Sterling Shepard, Kyle Rudolph, Evan Engram, Saquon Barkley, right?
Darius Slayton.
Darius Slayton, sure. On paper, what looks like the exact type of weapon set you want for a young quarterback. As it pertains to that, there are no excuses, right? If the offense is going to fail in 2021, it's going to be either because Daniel Jones is not taking the next step, or because the offensive line stinks, or because Jason Garrett is being Jason Garrett again, right? We cannot blame Golden Tate being the number one wide receiver, Sterling Shepard's mashed potato brains, right? Darius Slayton not living up to his rookie season, even though he was a six-round pick and seems to be a one-trick pony. There are no excuses on the weapons front anymore. Kenny Golladay is a New York Giant. Praise be. Dave Gettleman, Joe Judge, bravo. Good job reeling it in, doing your due diligence, right? You have O'Brien in from Detroit. You have Joe Judge, who's very friendly with Matt Patricia from their Patriot days. There were concerns. Weiss and I heard about some concerns that we won't speak about publicly, right? This to sum it up, this was never about the money. This was always about making sure that he was a culture fit and making sure that there were, you know, things were buttoned up. And, you know, I won't speak for Weiss, but I've always been of the belief that the culture stuff is a bunch of bullshit. And at the surface level, for a guy like Kenny Golladay, who suffered an injury, was playing for a dog shit team with a lame duck head coach, this was about ensuring that his kids and his kids' kids and his kids' kids' kids had a secured future. And you will never hear me bash a football player. That includes Leonard Williams. That includes Saquon Barkley's eventual next contract, for doing whatever they can to get their money. And Kenny Golladay sitting out for a majority of last season to protect his future is A-okay in my book. And if that's something that the Giants were concerned with, I think it's stupid. But at the end of the day, it didn't matter because he is now wearing blue. Weiss, I'll let you talk now because I just rambled for about 6 minutes.
No, I mean, I think you're excited. I think everyone should be excited. Kenny Golladay is a wide receiver one. There's no debate about that. We can debate where he ranks among all the top receivers in the NFL, but there's no debating. He's an alpha. He's a wide receiver one. He's going to open up a lot of things for this offense. He's a guy that can – he's big. He's physical. He can get up, go make contested catches. A lot of people compare it to Plaxico Burress. I sort of look at it like a Hakeem Nicks. Weight-wise, he's not as heavy as Hakeem was. Hakeem was a little bit more built muscular-wise, but length-wise, he's a tall receiver. It's a very good signing for the Giants because I think a lot of the moves that they made offensively to start the free agents or didn't make, it all came together when they signed Kenny Golladay. And yes. I think the most important thing that people have to understand is that, and we talked about this throughout the season when the Giants were failing to score points is, you know, you need playmakers. You need guys that can make plays. Can we debate whether an offensive line is more important or, you know, a specific type of playmaker is more important? Sure, we can debate all that. But you need guys that can make plays in this league. I mean, that's how you win. And the Giants, they just didn't have that. I mean, Sterling Shepard is a good receiver, but he's not someone that can, you know, make those playmaking plays. Sure, he can make plays, but he can't make those big type of plays on a consistent basis. They just didn't have enough, especially when Saquon Barkley went down. So getting somebody
I agree with your point, yeah. Right? Sterling Shepard is going to run with zero regard for his own safety across the field in the middle of traffic to make an 8-yard reception for a first down. But Sterling Shepard is not going to bully the opponent's CB1 for an entire game for 83 yards and 2 touchdowns. That's something that Kenny Golladay is going
to
do.
The perfect way to describe it is Sterling Shepard is a good receiver when he has a wide receiver one on his team. When he does have a wide receiver one, he's a very good receiver. When he doesn't have him, he's just a good receiver. So now
Kenny Golladay is someone Kenny that makes Golladay, everyone
it
makes, better.
It makes everything better. It completes everything. And even for a guy like Darius Slayton, who was quiet last year, but last year he was getting a lot of attention. Remember, this was a guy that had 8 touchdowns in his rookie year, came into year 2. We were expecting a similar type season. We didn't get that. But a lot of that was because, hey, he was facing a lot of quarterback ones. He was getting a lot of attention. There was safety up over the top because the Giants didn't have a guy that could take the top of a defense. So Golladay, you know, he's, like I said, he's not somebody that's, you know, top 10 or top. I mean, I'm not here to debate that. What I'm saying is when you bring him into your offense, he makes a lot of people benefit from him. And most importantly, the quarterback. So you talk about it's a big year for Daniel Jones. It is a big year for Daniel Jones. You look at the weapons that they've put around him. There's still the NFL draft left. There's still a chance they could take a receiver fairly high. So I think it's a really, really good signing for the Giants. We can debate the money, and I know a lot of people are basing that off of reports that we saw. But, you know, before free agency started, the understanding was that these receivers would reset the wide receiver market, right? People thought.
And that did not prove to be the case, shockingly.
Yeah, there were going to be guys that got $20 million, $21 million per year, right? That might not be, you know, the second or third best receiver, but that didn't happen. And so I think it's a great signing for the Giants. I think it puts together their offseason. And another thing I want to point out about Kenny Golladay and also Kyle Rudolph too, is, again, throughout the season, you know, when the Giants weren't moving the ball, they weren't scoring points, a lot of their struggles, now they struggled in a lot of areas on offense, but a key area where they struggled was in the red zone. Now, adding a Kenny Golladay and a Kyle Rudolph, two very, very good players in the red zone, that's going to help the Giants be able to score points. So it's all starting to come together for the Giants. You like what they've done so far. And it pertains to Golladay, the Giants finally have a true wide receiver one. And now it's going to be about results, and we're going to see if this team can finally become a winning team, because ultimately that's what this is. It's a result-oriented business, and they got to start winning. The team has to start coming together and winning games. And so surely as what they've done this offseason and last offseason helped that a lot. So it's we're excited. We're ready for the season.
Very excited. And it shouldn't go understated the Giants put all their eggs in the Golladay basket. Because let's say, for instance, they don't sign Kenny Golladay. Can you say for certain that this team improved this offseason? No. No, you can't.
No.
Because they haven't made any additions. I mean, listen, we're recording this at 6:24 on Saturday right now.
Yeah.
And as of right now, they have not made any additions to the offensive line, but they lost Kevin Zeitler.
Yeah.
Now, there's no debating that the Giants could not retain Zeitler at his current cap hit, but losing him, the offensive line gets objectively worse. As it stands right now, you have Andrew Thomas, Will Hernandez, Nick Gates, Sean Lemieux, I'm fucking Dave Gettleman right now, Shane Lemieux, and either Matt Pert or Nate Solder playing the other tackle spot, right? So you have uncertainty, underwhelming, hope that, and I'm going in order, right?
Right.
So
the best way to describe it is Dave Gettleman can sit up there and say, we're young. You guys call it, you can call it young. We'll call it uncertain. And it's an uncertain offensive line. Can they come together and play well? Sure. Is it a guarantee? No.
Right. So, and that goes to my point. So can they be good? Yes. But again, we do this every offseason, man. We really do. Injuries in the NFL happen.
Right.
You will be hard-pressed to find a team that does not suffer an injury at a key position, especially the offensive line.
Right.
What happens if Andrew Thomas goes down?
Right.
Huh? What happens if Will Hernandez goes down? And, okay, we're still young. The offseason is still young, but there are no studs out there. Anyone that you get at this point is going to be veteran depth, or you're going to be starting a rookie, or you're going to be making some sort of trade that's going to come out of left field.
Right.
So the Giants are an injury away from a very bad offensive line situation.
Right.
And had they not gotten Galladay, they would have decreased the performance along their offensive line. They would have been throwing a dart at someone like John Ross. They would have overpaid unnecessarily for a depth running back. And then they would have just brought back Leos while losing Dalvin.
Yeah.
So their defensive line would have gotten worse. Their offensive line remains a huge question mark. Their weapons for Dan Jones, probably, you could say that they would have improved anyway with the addition of Kyle Rudolph, but not to the extent that it would have with Kenny Galladay. But again, they put all their eggs in the Galladay basket and it worked out. So I'll give them kudos for that, but this is not a team that's ready to contend because there are still question marks all over the roster. And not only question marks, zero depth. Let's say Kenny Galladay goes down with another hip or a hamstring injury. They're fucked. There's still the draft, but right now they would be fucked. If Andrew Thomas goes down or if Matt Pert, Nate Solder go down, they're fucked. Leo goes down. They have zero proven people that they can stick on that defensive line.
Right.
So they have a very good start to free agency. They will have plenty of opportunities to improve the roster again in the draft, especially at 11, especially at 42. I think that those are two draft positions that can produce day one starters. I mean, I don't want to get into the draft talk right now because it's still early. I don't know, which receivers are projected to last until 42, but that's another thing. Kenny Galladay opens up what they can do at 11. A lot of people think that it precludes them from drafting another wide receiver at 11. I would agree. I don't think that with the addition of Kenny Galladay that they are going to go receiver at 11 because of the other needs along this team, right? You add someone like Rashawn Slater, all of a sudden your offensive line, that potential goes from, call it C+, B- level to B+, A- level.
Yeah.
You add a Micah Parsons, one of the cornerbacks, I forget the name, Patrick Surtain.
Caleb Fairley, yeah.
Sure.
J.C. Horn, yeah.
Yeah, there are plenty of guys that you can get at 11 to improve this roster at other positions now that you've added Kenny Galladay.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it boils down to.
Right.
So they have the playmakers. They have most of the defense. Now their quarterback and the offensive line need to make the leap in 2021. Otherwise, who the fuck knows? Now they got to go out and spend more high draft capital on the offensive line again, more high draft capital, maybe on a quarterback in a year or two. But this is it, man. Like, there should be no excuses anymore.
Yeah, I think so too. That's what I'm talking about. It's time to win. But you bring up a good point. You bring up, in terms of depth. And I hate this logic that some fans use where it's like the Giants sign a player or they restructure a contract to bring a player back. And people automatically assume, well, they're not drafting this player in the draft. Or, that means that they're cutting this player. For example, the Giants signed Kyle Rudolph And the immediate response is, well, they're trading Evan Engram. Well, no, not exactly. I mean, Evan Engram, I mean, sure, he's been a disappointment, but that doesn't mean that they're just going to give him away because they signed Kyle Rudolph. Kyle Rudolph is a 31-year-old tight end. There's no guarantee he can still produce at a high level. Evan Engram, we know, has been a disappointment, but not going to just give a guy away because you need depth at that spot. And you talk about the offensive line. You know, they brought back Nate Solder. All right, fine. They brought his cap hit down. He's basically a swing tackle. He's basically what Cam Fleming was last year. I expect them to add another guard, a veteran guard, in the free agent market once everything sort of calms down a bit. But just because they're bringing back Nate Solder, that doesn't rule out them taking a tackle. Because you can never have enough good offensive linemen. And depth is important because injuries, like you said, injuries do happen. So
I would prefer Nate Solder not touch the field in 2021.
Yeah, but here's the thing. If an injury, like Nate Solder.
Or Shane Lemieux.
Yeah, the thing about Nate Solder is, right, here's my point, is like you said, injuries happen. If Andrew Thomas goes down, right, you're gonna have to put somebody in there, and
right,
it's not like the Giants are sort of a farm system for offensive linemen where they're gonna have stellar offensive line play regardless how many injuries they face. No, when Tyron Smith went down, the Cowboys' offensive line took a hit. But you gotta have somebody that's playable. You know, that's how you fill out your depth, is by guys that can step in and play. If somebody's just a complete disaster who's unplayable and is like, why is this guy on the roster? Yeah, it doesn't work. So Nate Solder, while he's below average or bad or whatever you want to call him, he's not unplayable. If something happens, he's a solid guy, a swing tackle that can come in for an injury, whether it's at right tackle or left tackle, whatever. So my point is that you need depth, and I think the Giants understand they got to continue building their roster that way by building depth at key positions, whether it's at corner. They can certainly use help at their linebacker, edge rusher. Seems to me that their plan is to continue and just add guys to the mix, see what happens. They're sort of looking at Lorenzo Carter as an addition this year. I don't know if I agree with that. I would still like to see them sort of bring in more competition at the edge rushing spot. But it seems like they're looking at Lorenzo as an addition to the pot. And you're going to try to see what you can come up with, sort of like a pass rushing by committee, rather than having one sort of alpha pass rusher. Now, we'll see if that works. It hasn't worked for them the past couple years. But like I said, that's what their plan is. Because you can't just snap your fingers and find an alpha pass rusher. It doesn't work that way. So you got to just keep drafting, keep developing, see what can come out of it. But I think the roster overall, over the last 2 years, has seen a significant improvement. They're starting to, they found a cornerback one, sort of like their lockdown corner, which is very key in James Bradbury. They found a very good tackling machine linebacker in Blake Martinez. Very good player, just all around good leader in the locker room, leader on the defense. And now they're finding Kenny Golladay, you know, great receiver, sort of that wide receiver one. So you're starting to see good players fill key spots on the team, and that's what the Giants need. That's not something that they had, you know, over the last 3-4 years where this roster was just so depleted and going through sort of I call it a figure out mode, because the Giants couldn't figure out what they wanted to do. Are they a building team? Are they a win now team? So you're starting to sort of see it come together, and now it's just all about results.
Sure. Should we discuss the other free agent acquisitions?
Yeah, the big one is Leonard Williams, right? It's not okay. Really an acquisition, but
sure.
There was the other big money. Re-sign. Right. Here's my thing on it, right? Leonard Williams, the Giants handled the Leonard Williams situation horribly. I don't care who you are. They didn't win that trade. Right, they did. This is not something that the Giants.
And you say this is a Leonard Williams stan.
Yeah, like I'm a huge Leonard Williams fan. I was a Leonard Williams fan when he was with the Jets, actually, too. When he wasn't, We didn't have this breakout year, right? But the Giants didn't win this trade. They didn't. This wasn't a situation where, like, where Dave Gettleman should pat himself on the back, right? If the Giants wanted to, they could have signed Leonard Williams in the offseason. That year, which was supposed to be his final year, that year that they made the trade for him. And the Giants at the time were 1-6. Understand something, right? And this is going to be the last time I think we can talk about this. But their explanation as to why they made the trade for Leonard Williams made absolutely no sense. They had no answers for why in a season where they were 1-6, on their way to fire their head coach and coaching staff, would they trade a third round pick and a fifth round pick for a player that's about to be a free agent? You didn't sign him to a long-term deal before free agency. You took a look at him in a system that was not going to be around the following year.
Right.
Right? So all you really did was you said,
hey. That's probably the most underrated point.
Yeah. Right? Because you fired the head. Like, he said, well, we wanted to see him in a system. Well, wait a second. You fired that head coach. So, like, that system is gone. But the only thing the Giants really did for Leonard Williams was give him leverage. And then 1 year, you tag him. Okay, let's see what he does. Well, here's $16 million. Well, Leonard Williams looking at, okay, I'm franchise tagged. I'm no longer looking at what I was going to get on the free agent market if you didn't trade for me. Now I'm looking at what guys that are franchise tagged in my position are getting. And then Chris Jones gets paid, you know, handsomely. I think it was something along the lines of like 4 years, you know, $80 million or $82 million. I think he's making $20-21 million. He's like, okay, that's what I'm shooting for. And that's what leverage does. It raises your price, right? It gives you more value. And then they don't get a deal done. He plays last year. He has a career year. He was a monster last year, right? And then guess what? You have to franchise him again. You're in sort of like a cap strap because the, you know, salary cap goes down. You know, your other counterpart on the defensive line, Dalvin Tomlinson, leaves. His leverage rises. But despite all of that, I still think the Giants made out pretty well in this deal. And here's why. I thought for sure Leonard Williams would look to try to get a 4 or 5 year deal. And here's why. Leonard Williams really had only one, maybe two seasons out of how long has he been in the league? 5, 7 years? Out of the 7 years where he's really played like a $20 million a year player. He had 1 year with the Jets where he made the Pro Bowl, and then last year with the Giants. So this sort of deal makes it seem like, yes, Leonard gets to hit the free agent market in 3 years, but what happens if he doesn't perform up to par? He could go from this contract, which if he lives it out, gives him $63 million, to maybe he doesn't get that second big money contract if he doesn't perform like he did last year. So I was surprised he only took a 3-year, $63 million deal. I thought he would look at 5 years with around $20, $21 million a year, just so he can lock himself in for at least 4 years. But this deal is essentially a two-year, I think it's a $52 million deal where the Giants can essentially get out of it after year two. So if he doesn't perform well, he's gone. I mean, they can get out after 2 years. If he lives it out, it's a 3-year, $63 million deal. So I like it for the Giants. They made out well given the circumstances. But the overall handling of the Leonard Williams situation doesn't get talked about enough on a national level because it's a defensive lineman. But this was handled much worse than the way the Cowboys handled the Dak Prescott situation. The Giants still, I think, made out okay if you're looking for a silver lining there.
I mean, yeah, but you outlined exactly why that this whole situation was
completely avoidable.
Completely avoidable. But not only that, we're talking about a guy with one elite year of production in his entire career, and this is tough, man. It's like what it boils down to for me is the fact that between the national media and the salary cap and what the rumors were about what Leonard Williams was going to command in his current contract, I feel like we as a fan base went in for an amputation and are celebrating that the doctor only had to remove two fingers. Like, this entire situation was avoidable, and they just paid big money to a guy that has done it once. Like, let's say Kenny Galladay has been in the league for 7 years, and only one of those years he had 1,000 yards and 10 touchdowns. Every other season he had 450 yards and three touchdowns. The fan base would be rioting right now if they had shelled out that kind of money to someone like that. And I understand that the term is not that bad. It's essentially a two-year deal. But we're talking about a team that has no elite offensive linemen, no depth at the position, that doesn't have a single pass rusher, that needs depth help in the secondary. And to have just avoided this situation entirely or gotten him at a better contract when he was scheduled to be a free agent originally and being able to retain a Dalvin Tomlinson who commands double teams, like, this situation could have been so much worse. But had it not existed at all, this team would just be in a much better place. How about that?
Yeah. I mean, essentially, because of the way they handled the Leonard Williams thing, it cost them Dalvin Tomlinson.
Sure.
Right? Because if they...
Which not the end of the world.
It's not.
Because,
it's not the end of the world.
Because it's not like Dalvin Tomlinson's some elite pass rusher on the interior. He's a very solid player.
Easy guy to root for. Hard worker. Yes. Good locker room guy.
It's the opportunity cost of the picks they gave up for Leo,
right,
the money that they could have saved if they had handled this properly, and the other pieces that could be on this roster right now had they done this the right way with a sound process. That is really what it boils down to, that this team in the 2018 offseason draft and the 2019 offseason and draft did not have a sound process. And you could argue that they didn't have a sound process for a majority of 2020. And when things started to go really south, Joe Judge whipped out his dick and really wielded his influence,
yeah,
because you could really see things start to change.
Right.
Now, we saw that this past offseason. But like I said, the Giants doing their due diligence and all this, it just shows that they now have a slightly better process in place than they did before, but a sound process from the get-go. The Giants, we would be talking about, there's a world in which we would be talking about the Giants as being legitimately ready for a deep playoff run and maybe a Super Bowl run had they had a legitimately sound process in 2018 and hired a real general manager. So
here's what I'll say about the Leonard Williams thing, okay? Over the Cap, or Sports Track, I'm sorry, they do very good work. I follow them a lot.
I love Sports Track.
Yeah. Back in 2019, during that year, and I actually looked this up at that time because, I like I said, I'm a Leonard Williams fan.
Yes.
He was projected to get a three-year deal worth somewhere between $13 and $15 million per year. Now, Ethan, if the Giants did not trade for Leonard Williams, and let's say they pursued him heavily in free agency, no guarantee they would have got him. But again, it's not the end of the world if they don't get Leonard Williams. I mean, it's not like Leonard Williams, you know, helped their win total.
I'll say this. The Giants, by trading for Leonard Williams, showed that by giving up picks for a pending free agent in a lost season, would have probably been willing to pay slightly than higher market price to get him in free agency anyway.
Right.
I know that people say it's not a guarantee, but I can almost guarantee that
right,
had Leonard Williams made it to free agency, he would have been a Giant anyway.
Right. Now, if they would have signed him to that, let's say, three-year deal, you know, paid him $15 million a year, we're talking about that Leonard Williams signing the same way we're talking about the James Bradberry signing and the same way we're
probably
talking about
better. Probably better.
Right. Because you traded for him and because the whole situation after that was handled so poorly because you weren't able to get a contract extension and you made him bet against himself and he goes out and has a career year, not only do you have to pay him exponentially more, but it costs you all that money and all that resources to get him and cost you potentially re-signing Dalvin Tomlinson or another free agent and
yes,
drafting a potential starter in free agency.
Yeah. Yes.
So it's not that Leonard Williams is a bad player. It's that you just gave up a lot to get him, and you lost all
and
the
even
leverage.
More to retain him.
Yes, and gave up a lot of leverage to retaining him. That's the thing about Leonard Williams that people need to understand. Nobody in the Giants front office, maybe outside of Kevin Abrams, because his contract is the way he structured this thing is really, really, really well, can pat themselves on the back when it pertains to Leonard Williams.
Sure.
All right. Cool.
All right.
Who's the next free agent you want to talk about?
Let's do John Ross. I want to do Booker.
Here's what I'll say about Booker.
Can I make a joke first?
Yes.
If you're going to look at this entire offseason and you were told, okay, Joe Judge patted Dave Gettleman on the back and said, okay, Dave, we'll let you make one signing. All right, big fella. It would be this one.
Yeah.
Unnecessarily overpaying for a fucking running back as your first move in the free agency period is the most Dave Gettleman move of all time. Completely unnecessary.
I wonder why. Could it be because he actually did do something like this in 2018?
Exactly.
Like, it's almost an identical contract he gave out.
Yeah. It's another donation. The John Stewart scholarship going to Devontae Booker this year.
Although I will say Devontae Booker is a lot better than Jonathan Stewart at that time.
Of course he is. So but the argument is that you have Saquon coming off an injury. You need someone who is a reliable. No, I don't give a fuck. You can go. What is Philip Lindsay's contract, right? Okay. I don't want to hear special teams. I don't want to hear, like, no matter what way you want to spin zone this, you can't.
No.
This is an awful contract. And just because our friend Art Stapleton was just an F-minus take on the timeline, I'll call him out for it, saying essentially, after the Giants signed Galladay, what do we think of the Booker signing now, Giants fans? Still terrible, actually. Signing Galladay and taking a high upside swing on John Ross does not make the Devontae Booker contract any less bad.
No.
Go throw a fucking dart in the middle of the draft. Go out there and find any Joe Schmo that's on some practice squad, right? Go bring back Wayne Gallman. I don't know. There are a million things that the Giants could have done instead of overpay Booker. I'm going to probably try not to lose sleep over this, but that's just an F. That signing gets an F.
Yeah,
and absolutely. Is why I cannot give the Giants an A+ in this free agency, because that signing just brings down the overall grade. Everything else I am pretty happy with. Devontae Booker is just inexplicable.
14 running backs were signed so far in free agency, right? And I'm looking through them. Kenyon Drake, just laughable what the Raiders are doing. Chris Carson, I mean, why don't you go get Russell Wilson on the offensive line? Jamal Williams got 2 years, $6 million in Detroit. Devontae Booker got the fourth largest contract for a running back this offseason. 2 years, $5.5 million. So people are like, well, it's just $5 million. Yeah, but it's like the fourth most that a running back got, right? Like the other three, like Kenyon Drake is going to have a role with the Raiders, right? Although they have...
That was still an awful contract.
It's an awful contract, but like, it's an awful contract. Chris Carson is a starting running back in Seattle. He's a 1,000-yard running back. Kenyon Drake, you know, is a multidimensional back that will have a role. You know, Jamal Williams is going to have a role in Detroit. Devontae Booker, 2 years, $5.5 million. It just doesn't make any sense to me, because you already have Saquon Barkley coming back. He is your running back, right? He's going to be playing, you know, 85, 90% of the time. So you're signing a running back for $5.5 million for special teams purposes, or you're paying him $3.5 million this year.
It doesn't make sense.
It just doesn't make sense. It just doesn't make any sense. And you could have waited. You could have waited, you know, late into the off season. And I think this is the type of contract you can get on a veteran minimum type deal.
Yes.
Instead, you know, it's a 2 year, $5.5 million.
Who was lining up to sign Devontae Booker?
Nobody.
Whom's GM was standing there next to the phone waiting for the clock to strike whatever time free agency starts and saying, you know what, my first call is Devontae Booker. I hope Dave Gettleman doesn't beat me there. No one.
Let me just give you some names that are still free agents, okay?
Todd Gurley. At least the Giants didn't sign Todd Gurley to 3 years.
There's Duke Johnson. There's Tevin Coleman. There's James White. There's Matt Breida. There's Mike Davis. There's Damian Williams in Kansas City. Brian Hill in Atlanta, right? Yeldon is still available. Jerick McKinnon is still available. These are all multi-dimensional backs. My point is you could have waited.
They can play special teams, too.
Yeah, my point is you could have waited. There's still a lot available, right? Instead, you give Devontae Booker the fourth largest contract handed out for a running back. Of all the running backs signed so far this year, Devontae Booker will have the third highest cap hit of all the backs signed this year. It just doesn't make sense to me. Horrible signing. I don't care who did it. I don't care who pushed for it. It's an F. Capital F. And can you give an F minus? Like,
yes. It's an F minus.
It's terrible for so many
reasons.
It's
the type of grade you get when your teacher hands back the test and doesn't actually have a grade on it. It just says in red ink, see me.
Yes.
That's what the Devontae Booker signing gets. Dave, come to my office after class.
Yes.
Yeah.
And now, I wouldn't be this angry about it if I didn't see so many people that I consider credible justifying the signing. Like, holy shit, man. If I see one more person mention special teams and Devontae Booker again, I'm going to bash my head through a computer screen. I guarantee you, you've never watched one snap of Devontae Booker on special teams. Please stop talking to me about special teams and paying a running back $3.5 million to play special teams. When you have Saquon Barkley, who has a $10 million cap hit this year. Stop. Please.
Yep.
Full stop.
Now, on the other side of things.
Yeah.
John Ross.
Now, that's a type of move.
Reggie Ragland, too.
Reggie Ragland, too, yeah. Now, we're not saying these guys are going to work out and it's great, but for a team that's rebuilding, that's looking anywhere they can for some sort of depth, Reggie Ragland, John Ross, there's where you go.
Right? Exactly.
Reggie Ragland is going to have a cap hit of $987,000. A lot of money for you and me, not a lot of money for an NFL player. And guess what? He's an upgrade over what they had last year, David Mayo and Devontae Downs. Given the fact that his cap hit's going to be so basically unknown, that's an A signing. Now, Reggie Ragland might be horrible, but guess what? That's all right because you took a risk. You took a flyer on him. It's not costing you that much.
Right.
John Ross, at the worst, right? He's going to be a depth player. You know, he's not going to be your wide receiver one or two or three. He's probably going to be your wide receiver four. He might find a role on special teams. Hey, people like talking about special teams. Might be a kick returner. Might be a punt returner. Hey, maybe you actually tap into that potential and he can become, you know, a deep threat option who makes one or two, you know, big catches, you know, a game or over a course of four or five games. He makes, you know, some sort of big play and you're like, okay, that's why you sign a player like that.
Sure.
So that's why that's an A. And another one I'll throw out there, too, that they signed in is Efedi Odenigbo.
I think you actually you got that right.
Cool. 1 year, $2.5 million. Young player, right? Didn't play a lot of snaps, but when he did, he produced. That's the type
10 and a half sacks over his last two seasons, I believe.
And what's the one thing we know is that Patrick Graham is a fucking wizard when it comes to coaching players and, you know, putting players in position to succeed. I can get behind that.
Right.
Efedi Odenigbo, John Ross, Reggie Ragland, those are the type of signings the Giants should be making. Those are the type of signings that are low risk, meaning they don't impact their salary cap, but they are potential to be high reward for you going into the season.
Yeah, I mean, you said it. High risk, high reward. That's the name of the game, especially where the Giants are in their quote-unquote rebuilding process. And it makes the Devontae Booker signing even more inexplicable. Like, what are you thinking? Like, the same brain trust that went out there and said, you know what, John Ross can run a 4.3 40, and Reggie Ragland, you know, I'm sure Joe Judge still has connections at Alabama, and I'm not even going to try to pronounce the new defensive end's name.
Ifedi Odenigbo.
Okay. Well, we still have time to get the pronunciation down. But the same brain trust that went out there and gave Devontae Booker that guaranteed money also decided, hey, let's lowball the shit out of these high upside. Formerly, I'll say, I don't know about Ifedi Odenigbo, but I remember Reggie Ragland had draft hype. John Ross was a former first-round pick, right? Like, these are guys that, okay, maybe those scouting reports were incorrect. At worst, they won't have an impact. At best, they are regular starters on your team that you have to seriously consider extending at the end of the season. That's how you know the signing that these would be successful signings. If at the end of the season or halfway through the season, you're saying, wow, I really want Joe Judge and Dave Gettleman sitting down with this guy to work on an extension because they have proven to be a valuable part, right? Yeah. You just said Patrick Graham, as it pertains to Ragland and Odenigbo, defensive wizard, can probably turn these guys both into very productive members of the defense. This one will be a stretch, but you get John Ross in a wide receiver room with Sterling Shepard, Kenny Golladay, and Joe Judge, former wide receiver coach for the Patriots. Who knows what can happen? Yeah. So, high upside. That's the name of the game. You're not trading for these guys. You're not losing draft picks. You're not using significant salary cap space. That is why those signings are what we love to see.
Low risk, high reward.
Absolutely. All right. What else to discuss?
Did we discuss Kyle Rudolph?
No, I think we sort of skipped over that one. Yeah. A signing that at first I was like the player, didn't like the money. The money doesn't appear to be too bad. I really like it. I think if you're running a two tight end set with him and Engram, they're two totally different types of players, right? A guy like Engram, it's weird. It's sort of like an oxymoron. Due to his skill set, he is going to draw better defenders than Kyle Rudolph. Historically, he just hasn't been able to take advantage of those opportunities. Kyle Rudolph is probably someone that Jason Garrett is going to try to mold into his new Jason Witten. But I am not expecting all that much other than a good third down target and a good red zone target out of Kyle Rudolph. But again, not a good enough signing. It's something that they needed. Definitely confusing because they could have just outright cut Toilolo, and you still have Caden Smith and you still have Evan Engram. So I don't understand exactly what they're doing. I would have just gotten rid of either Smith or Toilolo, but Rudolph is certainly an upgrade, so I can't complain.
Well, I think Caden Smith is he's going to be the odd man out here. I think
probably.
Yeah.
I think you know what he reminds me of? He reminds me this offseason what Ryan Connolly was to Giants fans a year ago.
I don't understand the love affair with Caden Smith. I got to be honest with you.
Well, so that's the thing, right? Like when he got in, like sometimes he was noticeable, but like he's really not all that great. And I guess the same with Ryan Connolly. The fan base was like infatuated with him because he was making tackles, but this administration obviously felt differently and decided to move on. But like that's the vibes I'm getting because everyone's like, oh, Caden Smith. You can't cut Caden Smith. It's like, well, if you got Evan Engram and you got Kyle Rudolph, you can probably cut Caden Smith.
The thing is that Caden Smith, like if they would have cut Caden Smith last year, I wouldn't have been up in arms. Like the only time I remember Caden Smith was I think the Washington game in 2019. I think he had a pretty good game. But other than that, I don't remember Caden Smith ever popping out. Like I never understood it, but for so long, the Giants have been giving out these weird contracts. And I actually did it last year, too, with Levine Toilolo. Is that how I pronounce his name? I'm so bad with these names.
Levine Toilolo.
They've been giving out these weird contracts to specific blocking tight ends, right? Red Ellison got an enormous amount of money, right, for just being a blocking tight end. Never had a, you know, never was a pass catcher in Denver. But he comes here and is like, gets like $8 million a year, and you're like, what the hell? Levine Toilolo, same thing, right? Never had a receiving role throughout his career, but all of a sudden they give him like this multi-year deal, right?
Yeah.
Kyle Rudolph is the first.
Who's that fucking guy from Oakland?
Brendan Myers.
Yeah.
He was a terrible blocker, but I was just horrible. I remember that. I actually was excited for Brendan Myers too. But anyways, they've been giving out these weird contracts to people, like to these blocking tight ends where you're like, wait, what the hell? Like, do you plan on having a much larger role for them? And then they're just exactly what they've been their entire career, which is a good blocker. Kyle Rudolph is the first guy, the first tight end the Giants have since that year they had, Kevin Boss, that is a blocker and a pass catcher and is good at both. He doesn't drop passes. He's a good blocker. He's over 30, but it sort of gives them sort of that complete tight end, and that's something that they didn't have for a while. And also, he's very good in the red zone. I think the one thing we're seeing with the Giants, with these signings, both Galladay and Rudolph, is they're getting two guys that are very, very good red zone targets.
Yeah.
That's important.
Because they were awful in the red zone.
One of the worst teams in the red zone.
So, all right. Should we wrap up?
We missed one guy, Mike Glennon.
Oh, okay. No comment.
I you know why I like the Mike Glennon signing? Because Mike Glennon actually had decent starts last year. And if he has to step in for a game, which we can't rule out given what we've seen from Daniel Jones the last 2 years, I know Colt McCoy led them to their biggest win of the season last year. But, like, that Cleveland game, Colt McCoy was tough to watch.
Yeah.
Like, that man looked like he could
have been... it's certainly an upgrade, but, you know.
But the reason I like it is because it's only a one-year deal, and it's only $1 million. Like, I thought he was going to get somewhere between, you know, $3-4 million. But 1 year, $1.3 million for Mike Glennon to be your quarterback, too, I actually like that. That's good value. I hope he doesn't have to step in and play a lot of games, but if he does, I know this is a guy that, hey, at least had some good starts in recent memory. Like, outside of, like I don't remember the last time Colt McCoy had a start where I was like, oh my God, he played so well. Right. Glennon actually played well for Jacksonville at the end of the last season.
All right.
That's just my 2 cents on it.
That's fine. I'm going to have zero thoughts on that. If he is starting, it's because Daniel Jones is injured or atrocious.
Well, listen. I hope Daniel Jones doesn't get hurt. But let's say, God forbid, if Daniel Jones goes out for one game, you'd much rather have Mike Glennon starting than Colt McCoy.
Yes, agreed.
All right. Agreed. There's your upgrade at quarterback, too.
All right. Perfect. All right. With that, let's wrap it up. We didn't take questions. We just wanted to ramble. Follow us on Twitter. You can follow me at EthanGSN, follow Weiss at NYG Daily, follow the blog at GothamSN. Subscribe. We're everywhere. iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, Spotify. Subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, rate us 5 stars. And who knows when we'll talk to you guys again, but hopefully soon.
Definitely. Take care. Peace.
All right. Peace.